E2, number 14A.
When you read that chapter chronologically, you can't help feeling that suddenly at a certain paragraph, she leaves the first part and starts with the second part with a completely new subject. And that what it makes new is that as if she would say, now I have shown you the theory of how every idea of the seven synonymous term is the savior to a counterfeit belief, savior to the belief. And now I want to show you the practical side of it and show you that that what I have shown you has proved itself right through the history of the spiritual development of the idea in human history. And starts with the Adam dream and showing that the Adam dream is still here, and then depicts in big stages the unfoldment of the idea, how the idea precipitated itself on humanity, how the idea had an impact on the thinking of humanity, first on Adam and then on Jacob and people like this up to the present age, and bringing out that this is the reason for a civilization, that this is the reason why there is progress in civilization at all, why we have come out of the old magical way of looking at the universe, the old mystical way of looking at the universe, and that this is really on account of the working of the idea, not on the account of people having ideas. I think this is the big point which one is hearing more and more being pronounced in today's literature, that thinkers today, like Heidegger and so, bring out very clearly that it wasn't the thinkers that were bringing civilization forward, that the thinkers had new ideas, and by having new ideas, that would help the world, and that would develop the standard of civilization. But they begin to realize that, what Mrs. Eddy is showing here, that the idea was that which made the thinkers think new ideas. That the thinkers were under divine guidance and dictates, that it is the idea of being that really is working in human history, in the mentality of all the thinkers in the world, and is forcing the thinkers in the world to think the way they are thinking. So that the thinker is not the originator of new ideas, he's only, so to say, the channel, the transparent window pane through which the light shines, and the idea wants to progress, wants to evolve, and uses always those spots where the light can shine through. And therefore one has a feeling that if Plato wouldn't have lived, then the idea would have used somebody else. But if Jesus wouldn't have lived, then the idea would have used somebody else to be a Jesus. And that if Mrs. Eddy wouldn't have lived, that the idea would have used another person to be a Mrs. Eddy, to bring forth the idea of Christian Science. That no person, no human mind is the creator of ideas and progressive ideas. They are the willing mediums through which the idea can shine through, giving us that wonderful sense that if we are willing to let ourselves be transparent, that the idea of revelation will shine through us too. That it isn't a question, can I be a greater thinker. It's a question, can I be more transparent for the idea that anyway wants to manifest itself? It is as if that light would just come to the whole universe and that every ray of light would just find, sort out and see, where can I shine through? and use that person, that channel, that incident as a way and a possibility to bring forth a new life. That's the science of being. And the second part shows that. The question is, how can we be transparent for that? If we see that a revelation and a progressive idea is not something that an intelligent man thinks out, or that it is something that a very busy, very, what is the term, somebody who works very much, that they are therefore used to be the channel for a new idea, that is not so. That it is actually the measure of being transparent to the idea that makes a thinker to be a progressive thinker. And so the third part in that chapter shows us what makes us transparent. Because that third part is the platform which shows that if we would understand that platform, that this would lead to immediate results, so that we can say, all right, if we let ourselves be the calculus of idea, because she presents the platform as a calculus of ideas through the word Christ, Christianity, and science, so that if we entertain in consciousness that calculus, that would enable us to see more. You see, that's the reason why Mrs. Eddy never says God reveals. The moment she uses the verb reveals, she doesn't attach it to God. She always attaches it to science, to Christian science, to divine science. Naturally, she could have said God reveals, but then she would have gone right back really to the religious and mystical age and say, yes, in the religious sense we think that if something is being revealed, that is God. But in a scientific age she could see that it is actually science that reveals. And science means a knowledge of a working knowledge, really, of the divine infinite calculus of ideas. So that if our consciousness is geared and synchronized to the calculus of ideas, then our consciousness is transparent for any new idea that reveals itself in the line of spiritual development. It will always reveal that which is in the line of spiritual development. And therefore one has to accept that idea and be faithful to that idea, even if the world does not yet see it, does not yet accept it, because spiritual development always takes, when it is translated into the plane of human thinking, time. So we can see that platform as the calculus of ideas. So you have in that one chapter, really, the dynamics of ideas in various ways. In the first part, in the theoretical presentation, that the dynamics of ideas takes away the power, the belief in any other power. And that the second part shows the dynamics of ideas, how it operated through civilization. And in the third part shows how the dynamics of ideas is a science, is a calculus, and not just an atomistic idea. You remember how last week we had quite a kick in seeing that an idea is not something atomistic, but that an idea has structure and therefore operates always as a whole calculus. And this is naturally something new about which people have not been thinking a lot in the field of Christian science, that they always thought about idea as as if it would be some kind of an amorphous form, an amorphous unit, amorphous entity with high quality, with high power quality, whereas we see that an idea is within itself not only structured, but that it is within that structure dynamic, which is a calculus of ideas. So the moment we touch a right idea, that idea begins to operate in its calculus and will lead us from the first inception of the world through the Christ to its outcome, and will bring, therefore, in science forth a completely new insight into the whole question of being. That's how, really, a new perspective of the science of being is won, is gained. I think one cannot take this thing too seriously, because in the mentality of the seekers for truth is still that mystical sense that the revelation just drops down from heaven at an unexpected moment, as if nothing else would have been needed except to wait and open up one's arm and expect that something will happen. It's a mystical sense of revelation. Whereas Mrs. Eddy says, science reveals. But if science reveals, then science is not just a term. It's not just because we call ourselves Christian scientists that then a new idea will be revealed to us. We say in a colloquial way, well, we are in Christian science. Don't you say that? We have a colloquial way in German where we say we are in Christian science. Do you say that? Yes? Well, what does it mean? I'm in Christian science. Usually it just means I am in the denomination called Christian science. But to be in Christian science, to be in science, means that our whole consciousness is really in the realm of that structural sense of the idea of science, and is operating as a calculus within that structure of this science. Then we can say, I'm in Christian science, or I'm in science. You know that Peggy Brook always brings that up and says, I'm a calculus. Then she is in science. When we see that I am a calculus, when one sees that one is the embodiment of a calculus of ideas, which is only possible if one first has seen the structure of an idea, then one is in science. And this is what this Science of Being chapter tries to teach us. Yes. Then we go to the chapter 11, Some Objections Answered, which brings out what we have put down here, really the coherency of ideas. As far as I could see at my time in talking to the Christian scientists, they didn't give much heed and attention to this chapter, because originally it was written in order to give answers to the objections that the clergy were bringing forth against Christian science, and so we're answering some theological questions. And so usually Christian scientists felt, well, I'm no more very theological, so I'm no more interested in repudiating these objections, and actually therefore are not too much interested in this chapter. What a pity. It's such a terrific chapter. Because in this chapter, she wants to bring out much more than just to answer some objections that some people bring forward. And actually, you can go through the text and you can ask, what are these objections that are being brought forward? But when we put them back into our system of reference, one begins to see what Mrs. Eddy really tried to show. Namely, that as long as there is something within each one of us that is not absolutely in line with the blending of ideas, then we have within ourselves objections against the wholeness of that idea, against the consistency and coherency of the idea. I use the term consistency and coherency of the idea. Why? Because this is really the main point in this chapter, and you can see it very clearly, because In all the preceding chapters, she would never use those terms, and in the chapters afterwards, she will not use these terms again. They are so unique to this chapter that one can't help seeing that this is actually the theme, to show that something is only whole if everything, 100%, is lined up to that idea and to the is pure in its infinite reflection. Therefore, we could also see here that it is showing the interrelationship of ideas, the unbounded, limitless, infinite reflectionship of ideas, so that each idea brings forth the whole, that the idea actually has always the quality of the whole, that the idea is never isolated from the whole. If it would be isolated, and therefore this is also a point in here, that there are no isolated ideas, that such a thing doesn't exist, that everything is always completely integrated with everything else, and only if it's integrated with everything else you have a coherency and a consistency within the whole. And would show, really, that that whole comes out from one grand root, that all ideas, and that is what we have learned in the Christianity order, that all ideas have one root in principle. That principle says, all ideas are my ideas. But that each idea is always the idea of the whole. Therefore, you have at the end of the chapter, where she always comes to the climax of the whole chapter, you have about four, I think, examples of this oneness of the idea with the whole, that an idea can never be isolated and can never be regarded isolated, and an idea is no more an idea when it is not the idea of the principle. By giving those examples where she says, I and my Father are one, where she says that drop of water is one with the ocean, where she shows that the ray of light is one with the Father, with the Son, sorry. Always this unity in Him we live and move and have our being. Can you see what she does? She tries to show that we get only a pure reflection when we see that each idea reflects each other idea via the way of being one with its principle. And would say that this consistency and coherency of the ideas is the basis for demonstration. That there is no demonstration without reflection. That reflection actually means demonstration. Because that pure reflection means there is no more any trait of evil in it. And that's demonstration. And that is really Christianity. Perhaps you remember the verbatim report of the Oxford Summer School, 1949, where John Dolly would show when he went through the Christianity sense, namely through Luke, that he would bring that out over and over and over, that only reflection is demonstration. That there is nothing mystical and magic about the power of demonstration, and to make a demonstration, that actually demonstration is nothing else but that our consciousness is at the point of absolute pure reflection, where each idea is one with its principle, where the drop of water is one with the ocean. Actually, what she brings out here, that reflection is demonstration, that reflection gathers another quality than just reflection, that reflection gathers a completely different quality, namely demonstration, is really the synergy principle which we always have, which says, you know, the whole is much bigger than the sum of its parts. It's no use just to put parts together. The whole is much bigger. If I have the drops of water individually, all the drops of water of an ocean individually, they are not as much as they are when they are brought back into oneness, because a drop of water cannot carry a boat. It cannot be the realm for the fishes. Only the interrelationship of those drops bring forth a new concept, the oceanic concept, and we leave, so to say, the drop concept. And that's the deeper meaning of this whole chapter, which says, let go of thinking in ideas that are atomistically regarded. Think of ideas always in the whole, in its principle, and then you see that an idea is a whole coherent, consistent structure of idea. And that gathers power, and nothing else can. So she uses very much those questions. How can we have a practical Christianity instead of just having a theoretical Christianity? Well, the theoretical Christianity would be if we would only see these ideas per se and see that they become practical in the measure as these ideas are interrelated and so closely knit together that they form a coherent, consistent whole without seam and rent. That's what Jesus had. It's a great chapter, but one has to be able to read it from the standpoint of the system of reference which we know, so that she would show that every inconsistency, this is another term she uses there, and incoherency is preventing a demonstration. It's like in mathematics where we would say, if you have to make a calculation that goes over a whole page, well, you only need to make at one point a mistake and the result is wrong. So you can make in a calculation with 100 different computations, only one computation must be made wrong and the other 99 right, the result is still wrong. You can't say it's 99% right. See, this is the idea that she brings forth in here, in this chapter. So can you see that this chapter has a Christianity touch in Christianity? Because the main focal point is ideas. But from the subtone of Christianity says, well, these ideas are related to ideas. Ideas. Huh? Making the realm of ideas. The consistency within the realm of ideas. The coherency within the realm of ideas. So you get a good spatial sense of ideas. All right. We come to the chapter on practice. And the practice is naturally, the application, say, the practical application of what? Of ideas. We use ideas. We heal not through matter. We do not heal through thoughts and through thought transference. We do not heal through arguments of affirmation and denial of error. We do not heal through arguments, nor through thought transference. All that stuff is not really Christianity as science, where you feel that the thought of the practitioner is helping you. That's just mesmerism in the purest sense. Or that there are strong thoughts and weak thoughts and things like that. This is all not in the realm of science. The realm of science only has to do with the ideas of the seven synonymous terms. They alone give spiritual healing. So it isn't the thinking of the practitioner that heals. The ideas of the seven synonymous terms heal. Therefore, we can see that this practice here is the scientific use of ideas, the scientific application of ideas. Yes. So we take up the last column, science, with the last four chapters on science and health. Chapter 13 is teaching Christian science, and you have transferred your findings. For instance, I was saying in my book that it means that by adhering and abiding by the divine principle, we become a scientist, a principled idea. So that really the focal tone would be that by adhering or obedience to the principle, we are becoming principle's own idea, that we are no more somebody outside of principle, but when the principled consciousness within us takes over, then that is actually one with principle, and we become a scientist. Or I have said that this chapter shows the way how to become a scientist, how to be one with principle. Perhaps you have transferred that. So it's telling the same thing again. So the focal point is that this chapter wants to show that by being principled, one is no more a man or a mortal, but that one is just principle's own idea. So one can see that this chapter tries to show the intimate oneness of one's consciousness with principle. Perhaps we can summarize it and epitomize it by saying, by adhering to principle, let's put it perhaps that way, by adhering or adherence to principle, we are a scientist.